Hello, welcome to another episode of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Recknell, and I have my very good friend, Kelly Strongatharm, here with me today. Hello, Kelly.
Hello.
I am so excited for this conversation. I feel like we have been waiting quite some time. You have had a heck of a couple of years. I mean, hell, you've had a hell of a 15 years. But we're going to narrow it down in our conversation today. But we have some really cool things to talk about. You and I met in Vancouver 13, 14 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And I've always looked at you, I've always known you as someone who really, goes for what she wants, sees things, sees opportunities, sees ways to make the world a better place, and goes for those things. So I'm excited to talk a little bit more about that. But before I ask you some questions, let me introduce you to our audience in a little bit of a more formal way. So Kelly Strongatharm is the founder of the Rubens Shoes Society and the author of I Am Emmanuel. As a child of adoption, Kelly understands the profound need for all children to know belonging and connection. In 2020, Kelly became a new mom to a beautiful boy from Haiti, and her mission to create impact at home as well as abroad became her next great purpose. Her love of animals, mostly her two dogs, has translated into a plant-based lifestyle where she hopes to expand on this and her new 5-acre property that she was able to manifest into reality. I mean, heck, there's so much hopefulness just in that bio, Kelly. I mean, seriously. So tell me, have you always been like a goal seeker?
Yeah, you know what? I think that I have. And it started at a really young age when I was in gymnastics. And it kind of was instilled in me then without even knowing it, right? And same with the whole visualization and manifestation, you know, close your eyes, picture yourself doing like the perfect gymnastics routine. And then so that kind of stuck with me throughout everything in my life.
And it's obviously been very successful, very successful. So there's a lot of stories that we could start with. General theme of your life is that you, you take on these big things, you see challenge and kind of, you know, kick it in the butt. Can we talk a little bit about, maybe let's start with your adoption story. I know bringing your son home has been quite the journey. And you really had to use hope to motivate action in that particular case. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, that is true, because I had to just have that underlying trust that it was going to work out. It was a 4-year journey, the process of bringing my son home. But most specifically, the harder part was the last one and a half years there, once I knew kind of who he was, and just the frustrations of the paperwork and just the mess that international adoption can be. I had to just hold on to hope that one day it would be like it is right now. And that's hard to do because I wanted to be a mom so bad. Like, it was the one big thing, but that's really hard. It's not in your control as much as other goals, right? You know, it's like, okay, I want to buy this new place or reach this goal in my job. But becoming a mom, I mean, yeah, there's ways to try to do it, but it really is not a lot in your control. And so a lot of it is just left to fate and just having that trust that it's all going to work out. And it did, but it was, yeah, it was really, really tough.
Well, and I have to dispute you a little, because it's not all fate. You worked your butt off. Like, I remember, so can you tell us a story of last March and the day that he was supposed to land in Canada?
Yeah, okay. So that is true. I mean, I do take action on the thing. So start of the new year in 2020, you know, things were starting to look like he'd be coming home in the next few months. I was just waiting on a couple signatures, get visa, passport. Like, he was legally my son, but I just needed a few of these things to happen. And then, of course, you know, COVID hits and everything is now getting shut down. And in my head, I'm like, if I don't get him home now, I don't know when I will get him home because everything was shutting down. And so I just, 24/7 for like a week straight, I made every call that I possibly could and ended up hooking up with an amazing senator who helped me tremendously. I was able to talk to the president of Air Transat and work with a team there and one of the head pilots. And because the problem was, is that the flights were going into Haiti to pick up the Canadians to bring them home. My son wasn't technically Canadian at that point. The flights were going in empty and coming back with people, so I couldn't go there to get him. And there was one flight left. And I was like, I am getting him on this plane. Is not an option. And you, like, whoever, you need to help me make this happen. And I fought very, very, very hard. I had to take some big risks. He lived up north. I had to find a way to get him into more of the central area of Haiti in Port-au-Prince. So I had to get a private plane within 24 hours to fly him to Port-au-Prince and hope that it would all work out. I mean, it's scary for him too. He had to say his goodbyes and not really know what was going on and hope that he would make it on that last flight. So it was so touch and go that I flew from Vancouver to Montreal. That's where he would be landing. I left not knowing that he was going to actually get on the plane. So I'm leaving that morning. He didn't have his passport ready at that point. And I didn't know until I had my layover in Toronto that he actually made it on that plane. And I had to go by myself because it was COVID. And I just, the thought of him not getting on that plane, I don't know what I would have done. I'm glad I don't have to think about that. I have a friend in Toronto who was on standby knowing, like, she came to the airport. She couldn't come in or anything, but just knowing, like, if he wasn't on that flight, that I would be a complete mess. But he got on that flight. And yeah, I guess I made it happen. There was a few other kids that were able to get on the flight too because of it. And I just don't take no. My philosophy is there's got to be a way. There's always a way. So let's figure it out and make it happen. And yeah, and now he's here.
Like, whoa. I mean, I can't even imagine. How on earth did you spend 4 hours in the air not knowing? Like, was that the longest 4 hours of your life?
Yeah, and I couldn't communicate, obviously, with anybody. And you know, you're wearing these masks. It was all so new. You're not talking to anyone. And you're all separated. And it was so scary. I was pacing that Toronto airport and on a phone with one of my friends. And she's like, you need to try to eat. And I'm like, I can't eat. And then when I got the call, I just like screamed and burst out like crying. Everyone's like looking around like, what happened? And of course, I'm there by myself. But yeah, you know, you just, it was so scary. I was terrified. My family was terrified. And it gets me super emotional even just thinking about it because I just needed to get him home.
And here he is.
Yeah.
Here he is. And you've had an incredible year, incredibly hard year as well. I mean, you know, COVID has been unbelievable on everyone, but add the extra complication of a brand new mom, a brand new son, in a brand new country. Homeschooling, holy crap. Well,
yeah, let's mention he's my brand new son who was 7 when he landed, so it's a whole new world for this young guy he's already got his personality and he already knows, you know, a lot, but this was literally a whole new world for him. He did really well though. He inspires me, really. He's quite remarkable.
Amazing. So cool. So cool. So, you know, we've talked about my definition of hope, and longtime listeners of the podcast will also know that my definition of hope is that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. I mean, hell, you are the epitome a hopeful person. You know, I also talk about something called hope theory, which includes pathways thinking, which is the ability to overcome the obstacles in our way. I mean, you couldn't be a more hopeful person from the sense of tenacity and making the impossible possible and all of those things. I mean, my God. I want to talk about another impossible activity that you have undertaken in your professional career. Tell us about Ruben's Shoes and how you started this charity for a kid in the Dominican.
So, with Ruben's Shoes Society, it didn't start out me thinking, oh, I'm going to start this charity. It simply just grew organically on its own with the support of the community and me kind of leading it. But so I had been sponsoring Ruben, a real little boy who lives in the Dominican Republic, for 7 years. And 7-8 years ago, I decided I wanted to go down to the Dominican Republic just for a Christmas holiday with my mom. And we asked if we could meet Ruben. And we got to spend the day with Ruben and his family. And he is also an incredible, he was 10 at the time when I got to meet him. We didn't share the same language, obviously. So communicating was a little bit hard, but there was just this like love between us. And he just has this amazing energy. And throughout the day, I just kept looking at him thinking, you know, here's this 10-year-old boy who's no different than a 10-year-old boy in Canada. It's just that he was born into a country with less opportunity. So, you know, we asked if we could take them out for lunch. He had never been in a restaurant. He never knew how to use the menu. When he ordered his food, he asked if he could take it home to his family. And then we spent some time where he was living, and his family was just so incredible and all very, very welcoming. And we left that visit really wanting to do more, but what do you do, right? You know, what charity do you work with? Who's making an impact? You just don't know what to do. And something that stuck out in my head was the kids running around in the village. They didn't have any shoes on. So I did a little bit of research and found out that kids in countries like the Dominican Republic can't go to school unless they have shoes. So I thought, well, I have lots of friends who have kids that outgrow their shoes quite quickly. I'll go home, collect a couple hundred pair, and go back and hand them out in the village. And then when I got home and kind of started talking about it, everyone was like, I love this idea. And I want to be involved. I want to be involved. And next thing I know, we're in schools doing presentations and shoe drives, and thousands of shoes are pouring in. And I needed to find a way to get the shoes to the Dominican. And 6 months later, you know, we've collected 10,000 pairs of shoes, and we were sending a shipping container down to the Dominican Republic. And again, it was one of those things where people were like, how are you going to do this? And like, I don't know, but I know it's going to work out. And we'll figure it out. And that's just what we did. And after that trip down to distribute shoes, we saw kind of what the impact we could make with the support of our community. And we wanted to, again, do more. And we were introduced to a woman there who had a private school, just 4 classrooms, 24 kids. And she was really struggling to keep it going. And so we partnered up with her. And kind of long story short, we now have a full elementary school. We've just recently purchased land, built a high school, and we are supporting over 500 students and 30 staff members in the Dominican. So it all started from connection with Ruben's Shoes. We've sent hundreds of thousands of shoes around the world. We're not collecting shoes anymore. The logistics were just a little bit too challenging. And in the end, the timing actually worked out perfect when we made that announcement, because then COVID came and it would have been really, really tough. And we would have been with a lot of shoes there. So our focus now is to provide education to our students and really stick with them through the whole duration of their education. That's why we built the secondary school too. But yeah, so it kind of just started out as this little idea, and everyone's like, you're crazy. And I'm like, I like that, right? When people challenge me in that way, like, you can't do that, or it's too hard. And then that's when it gets me going. When people are like, yeah, like, it's more encouraging, then I'm like freaking out. But when they're like, no way, I'm like, oh, I'll do it.
I've seen this shirt that you need. It says, underestimate me. That'll be fun.
I do need that. That's really the fire. We had so many challenges along the way, especially with the secondary school buying the land and just, you know, keeping up with the demand of building and funding at the same time. And it was a challenge. But and then again, COVID hit and, you know, couldn't go down there anymore. And we're still trying to build the school. But yeah, a lot of people said it wasn't going to happen. And it is going to happen. And it did. And it opened up. And, you know, the students are thriving.
And here we are. Here we are. And because you like, so speaking of sponsors, you're not collecting shoes anymore, but you have people sponsoring the kids, which is helping to support their families. Is that right?
So yes, we do have a sponsorship program. And that's how we mostly fund the schools, is through that. So it supports the child, the student specifically. It doesn't go to their family. It stays the child specifically for their education. So it gets their uniforms, their school supplies, obviously provides them with the education. We have a kitchen at the school, so they get to eat if they need transportation, if they need medical care, if they need like therapists. We all of that goes towards that. It was really important to me to have that transparency and people know exactly where their money is going and to have a relationship with their student. So when you write a letter to your student, I will typically, when there's no COVID, go down with the letters. Student will hold the letter, take a picture so that their sponsor can see that it's 100% of their donation is going to their student.
Amazing. Amazing. And what does Ruben think of all this?
Well, Ruben now is a young man and he still amazes me and yeah, continues to inspire me as well. He's special. He thinks it's cool, but he's very humble and he's just a really happy guy. And he talks about the impact, you know, he'll say things like, it's really great that you've given them opportunity for education, but really you're going to see how much it's going to impact their future and their family's future because of that. So he drops these things every now and then. I'm just like, wow, you're just, and then, you know, he'll start singing and he's really funny. And so he's a cool kid though.
Oh, that's so, so cool. So cool. All right. So you've got these inspirational kids. So you went ahead and wrote an inspirational book for kids. Tell us more about that.
Yes. Yeah, so I am Emmanuel. So Emmanuel's character is based on the students in the Dominican Republic. So a collection of their stories put into one boy, Emmanuel. And I wanted the story to talk to children here and other places that, you know, just because people live in different upbringings doesn't mean they don't have the same sort of dreams and hopes, and they're still funny, they still love their parents the same, you know, it's all the same, we're all basically the same, they just have less opportunity sometimes. But just to see, and I wanted it to be in a positive way where kids could relate to each other and see each other in Emmanuel. And so there's a lot of questions that are in the book that get kids thinking. And I also wanted a uplifting book where the characters, where my son could relate with the characters. He sees himself in Emmanuel. He was a big part of creating the book with me and helping with the editing and the illustrations. And and all the proceeds of the book go to Ruben Shoe Society.
So we will clearly have all the links that anybody who's listening would ever need to know to, you know, become a student sponsor, to buy multiple copies of your book. I mean, all of these things will be available, listeners. Don't you even worry about it. Because I mean, what an incredible vision and mission you have. Your imagination is just amazing. And then your ability to execute on these dreams is just awesome. Your tenacity is something to be admired. You know, I'm sure that these kids are very much looking up to you also as a role model, as a role model of hope. You truly embody all of the things that I love about doing this work. Is you are that girl. And it's really, really cool to see. And I know that you are on your next adventure, some 5 acres and building a farm.
Yes, that is true. A couple months ago, I bought a 5-acre farm and I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm having fun. Just before this call, I was learning how to pickle some beets and some zucchinis because my garden has exploded, which is great. But now I have abundance of vegetables and I'm trying to figure out what to do with all of them.
And what is your plans for the farm? Is it going to be just something that you and your son live off of? Do you have like commercial ambition?
Yeah, well, you know, I have lots of dreams and ideas, but I'm taking it slow and I'm kind of letting the land guide me. I want to learn a lot about, you know, the different seasons and what would grow here well. So I'm slowly doing things like that. But yeah, I mean, ideally, I would like to, you know, grow enough vegetables that maybe it would produce some sort of an income too. That would be great. Mm-hmm. But I don't know yet, right? I'm just kind of figuring it out. It's a great space. It's very peaceful. There's another dwelling on the property where my parents were able to move into. So just to have that opportunity to be able to do that for them and have them close by, just that alone has been incredible. Maybe one day, I mean, I'd love to have animals, but you know, that's a whole nother level of responsibility you gotta get up. You know, you can't really just go away for a week and hope that the animal just take care of itself. But maybe one day I would have some sort of a sanctuary for animals to live out their rest of their life here peacefully.
Yeah, you couldn't put them in your RV like you can put your 2 dogs.
No.
But
I mean, I could do like a little goat, the same as a dog, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, the possibilities are endless. Have you met you? I mean, come on. Do you recognize, or how do you recognize hope in other people?
That's a good question. I think really just how they are living their lives as well, right? I recognize it through people who are dreamers and they take action on their dreams. And that inspires me to watch, mm-hmm. right? Because it's scary. It's scary to go after your dreams. There's always tons of excuses and, you know, oh, I don't have this opportunity. And so the people that are taking those risks, they think, yeah, that brings me a lot of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very, you know, I believe that hope is contagious. And so if we can see other people modeling that behavior, it kind of encourages us to take some of those calculated risks as well. I mean, this entire podcast is intended to let others borrow the hope of the people I'm talking to. So, you know, it's, yes, I'm definitely well aligned there. I have one final question for you. The same one I ask all of my guests, and that is, Kelly, what gives you hope?
Well, I think I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but really it's just having trust that everything will work out in my favor. Even if the initial outcome doesn't seem to, that's what gives me hope.
So the, if I could paraphrase that, it will work out the way that it's supposed to, even if it wasn't what you initially envisioned.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's that whole, you know, kind of that optimism versus hope. I don't know if this is something that resonates, but people always ask me, you know, is optimism the same as hopefulness? And I think optimism is the wish. optimism is that trust that it's all going to work out. And there's no agency involved. There's no control there. It's just, it is what it is. Kind of like faith. It is what it is. It's just all going to be fine. But then hopefulness adds that extra layer of action. You can be hopeful and optimistic, but I don't think you can just be optimistic. You know,
it's true, because you have to believe in it. Mm-hmm. You have to believe in yourself, but to believe in that goal that you want. And that's what brings out the hope.
Yeah. And do the things, you know, an optimistic person might want to win the lotto, but a hopeful person will buy the damn ticket.
It's true.
Right? Hope without action is just a wish. You need to buy the ticket.
I agree.
Oh, Kelly, this has just been amazing, as I knew it was going to be. So thank you so, so much for spending your time with us. You are, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again, an incredible human doing incredibly amazing things. And I can't wait to continue to see what comes next. You know, when I will be the first in line to buy whatever it is the farm's going to produce. So.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
Easy peasy. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed this latest episode of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. These episodes are a labor of love. Inspiring conversations with hopeful people make my heart happy. If you also love this episode, it would be amazing if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. 5 stars if you're into it. It's these reviews that encourage Apple to promote this podcast to their network. And the more people that listen, the more hope we can spread into the world. Don't forget to check out the show notes of this episode to find all the links to my guests, books, and other resources referenced in this episode. You'll also find the link back to my website, where you will find additional support and resources for you, your team, and your community. I truly believe that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. And hearing from these guests on these episodes, I know that even more hopeful future is totally possible. I'm always looking for inspirational guests, so if you or anyone you know would like to be a guest on the show, please reach out. You can find me on the contact form of my website at expertinhope.com or by email at lindsay@expertinhope.com. When I was a teenager and my sisters were leaving the house to go out for the night, I always made it a point to remind them to call me if they need me. It was my way to tell them that I cared and would always be there for them. I'd love you to know the same, so all of you listening out there, call me if you need me. Again, thank you for your love and support of this podcast, my work in hope, and your intentional focus on making your future better than today. After all, hope without action is just a wish.